From high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, it's KZMU News. I'm Molly Marcello.
This is your news for Tuesday, April 7th. The number of coronavirus cases on the Navajo Nation is rising. As of Monday, there were 384 cases and 15 confirmed deaths. In response to community spread of COVID-19 on April 5th, President Jonathan Nez announced a 57-hour weekend curfew. This curfew will stretch from Friday, April 10th at 8 p.m. to Monday, April 13th at 5 a.m. Nez said that police will issue citations and fines if people don't abide by the order. The curfew does not apply to essential personnel, like healthcare workers and other first responders. According to the CDC, Native Americans are some of the most vulnerable to coronavirus because of economic and geographic conditions. Laura Morales from our partner station KJZZ in Arizona has more.
A good part of Percy Deal's day is spent hauling water for his family and livestock. So when he heard on the radio how often and for how long he was supposed to wash his hands to avoid the spread of the coronavirus, he was overwhelmed.
I mean, that's like a gallon and a half or so. For me, I'm using the same water at least three or four times. I use the same water for cooking. I use the same water for cleaning up. I can't be washing my hands that many times.
40% of the Navajo Nation doesn't have running water or indoor plumbing. Deal lives on Black Mesa in northeast Arizona next to a coal mine that shut down late last year.
Peabody Mine took all our water. Peabody closed, and then this virus comes along. It's one thing after another.
And mining did more than just drain the tribe's aquifer. Decades of uranium extraction have left generations of Navajos with major health problems. Adrian Lerma says these mines created conditions like autoimmune disorders that have left this community vulnerable to the coronavirus.
And so there are people that do have compromised immune systems because of this contamination that's really affected the land, the water, the air, the people.
Lerma is delivering food, water, wood, and medicinal herbs to the elders in her community who are on lockdown. But she says the food won't last long. About 1 in 10 Navajos don't have electricity.
And so that means there's people that don't have refrigeration systems in their homes. They can't store food. And so that puts them at a great disadvantage when it comes to stocking up on supplies they need.
The Navajo Nation also lacks enough healthcare workers, hospital beds, and other equipment needed to address the crisis. There are about 400 hospital beds for 170,000 people. So many patients have been flown to hospitals in border towns. Council Delegate Amber Kanazba-Crotty says the Indian Health Service was lacking resources before the virus.
We know it's not adequate to just meet our basic needs. And so now as this pandemic moves forward across, you know, the world, but on Navajo Nation, we're also seeing those gaps in the immediate response.
In 2009, American Indians and Alaska Natives died from H1N1 flu at four times the rates of all other racial and ethnic groups combined. But Navajo President Jonathan Nez has tried to get out in front of this pandemic. He ordered a curfew, he closed casinos, and he put a stop to gatherings of more than five people. Nez told a Facebook Live event he's fed up with those who are not taking this seriously.
Some of our people might not know that they have the virus. Don't be selfish. Think of your grandmas. Think of those people that have health conditions, because those are the vulnerable population.
With public officials raising the alarm, parents and kids are under a lot of stress. For families like Adrian Lerma's, she, her husband, and seven kids have been avoiding social media lately. Instead, they're returning to their traditions of telling stories. Stories of survival and resilience.
It lets them know that these battles have been fought before in the past and that we can fight them again today.
Lerma says arming them with that knowledge makes her kids feel confident that they can get through this too. Laurel Morales, KJZZ News, Flagstaff.
Thanks to our partners at KJZZ for that story. It comes from their Tribal Natural Resources desk. KZMU is very excited to announce this new partnership. We will be broadcasting their important stories covering tribal nations right here on KZMU News.
Good afternoon, relatives. My name is Kristen Ramirez-Marsh. I'm the executive director here at FCIC in Moab, Utah. Please make time for yourself, relatives. Go for a walk, connect with the land. If you have children or relatives that are in your home, that kinship is important. Storytelling is amazing. You know, if you're fixing cedar or if you are beating...
Kristen Ramirez Marsh, director of Full Circle Intertribal Center in Moab, speaking to her community through social media. The nonprofit aims to nourish healing for Indigenous women, men, and youth through Native American tradition and culture. They provide tribal services, traditional consultation, as well as cultural programs. And now, like many other service-oriented nonprofits in Moab, they are readjusting.
FCIC had a Marco Polo meeting, and we have decided that we are going to make elder kits, care packages for our elders here in the community. So we're going to make a dozen. Those kits are going to be rather large. We are going to have hygiene products along with cleaning products, food staples, traditional medicinals, and then we are also...
We speak with Ramirez Marsh about how FCIC is continuing its mission to nourish Indigenous people during this health crisis. So could you tell us what the last couple weeks have been like for Full Circle Intertribal Center? You know, what have been some of the changes in terms of organization and the work that you're doing for your mission?
Well, we're not allowed to gather, so we're not holding any programs at Youth Garden Project. So, you know, we usually seat anywhere from 30 to 45 people twice a month. So those programs aren't running right now. So as far as, you know, we can still carry out our mission, but just like a lot of other social services and other nonprofits here, we need to just adapt a lot to be able to carry out our mission utilizing a lot of technology. You know, we're doing a lot of Zoom meetings online and Instagram television now, which is funny because I was like, this isn't going to work. And then I got like 14 messages in my inbox and I was like, this works.
Right. People are on it. And yeah, they're tuned in.
Yeah, they are. They're on it. They're listening. And especially the youth. So it was definitely actually a really good tool. And that youth, you know, came to us in search for the elders, which was awesome to make that come full circle. So we're fairly new. So as far as like donations go and everything, you know, this is going to be hard for us monetarily just because we can't raise money because we were going to have like an Indigenous art show, which we can't do right now. But there's other ways and we're going to get creative and see what we can do to raise funding for programs that way, you know, when the time comes, we can start back up.
Yeah, I know that programming was a huge focus for FCIC this year. In this adjustment phase, are there other needs that you're serving right now as a nonprofit?
Yeah, I mean, we're still trying to get a clear picture of what we can do for our community right now. We have 12 elders in Moab, 11 of which are matriarchs, and, you know, they don't have what they need. So we're actually putting together kits right now for our elders, which there's going to be 26 items per kit and a dozen kits. And I'm going to sanitize all the products in the boxes and get those all set up. And then they're going to be out for delivery on Friday.
So taking care of the elders that are in Moab is part of what you're doing right now.
Yeah, just making sure they have what they need. You know, the elders, the Native peoples, they're such a huge part of who we are. You know, they hold the stories, they hold the teachings, you know, they're sacred, and they raised us. And it's just really important that they know that we are here and that we are going to take care of them in return. So we're really excited about these kids and just getting this done for our elders. And thankfully, you know, it's not cold, so we don't have to worry about firewood right now. We're thankful for that. But as we kind of get a clearer picture of, you know, what we can do, we're here. And then, of course, guiding anybody to other resources that, you know, if it's out of our scope with our vision or if it's something that we just can't do, to guide them to other resources in town.
And as far as, you know, other tribal nations or nearby tribal nations, how involved is FCIC with tracking what's happening?
There's a lot of incredible people that are helping right now in Navajo Nation. And even like one of the rural areas in Navajo Nation, like one of the most remote areas, is Navajo Mountain. And there's just been so many incredible people helping on Navajo Nation right now that it's just incredible how much help is happening down there. Pete Sands has been a really big inspiration to me personally to see what he's been doing. And UNHS, of course, you know, has really stepped up. And, you know, I think the Arizona Army National Guard actually just came in about 11 hours ago, and they're down there right now, basically bringing a lot of supplies in for COVID-19. So definitely tracking it. And, you know, we have connections where we're constantly messaging each other to see if there's anything that we can do. But with the travel restrictions, we're just kind of, like, respecting that right now. But as far as supplies go, you know, I was thinking that maybe if there is this peak that is to come, that is something that FCIC could do, is that we could have a driver that can, like, meet someone from UNHS or meet somebody from Montezuma Creek or something halfway with more supplies if need be. Like, there's always opportunity to partner, and there's always opportunity to help.
Yeah, you know, with that, how can people stay connected to what FCIC is doing and figure out ways to help, or where's the best way to get in touch for people who are interested?
We do utilize our Instagram a lot for social media, and of course we have an office phone number that they could call if they have questions or want to, you know, update on anything. And we have a Facebook. So social media, like our website, I haven't updated yet, but I will. But social media is, you know, pretty huge for us. It's just easy to utilize. And then of course, if anybody called, or like I'm constantly answering our phone, so that way I can at least direct people to the resources that they need, or see if we can help with what they need when they're calling.
And finally, you know, you've mentioned, and I know that gathering is a huge part of Full Circle Intertribal Center, gathering in person and, you know, having that connection. How are you moving forward in this time where you actually can't gather, at least in person?
It's hard. You know, we're getting creative. I think we're going to do like a Zoom beating class. And then, so we're going to have an elder just, like, come in, and then we're definitely going to have, like, some storytelling sessions. And then he's been talking to Orion a lot from the health department. He's so wonderful, and he's just been so amenable and kind. And I think what we're going to do, and Caitlin Thomas, the ED from YGP, I think in mid-May and in June, we're going to do 40 meals twice a month, like freezer packets of our traditional foods, like traditional veggies with our traditional, like, steamed corn stew and green corn mush ice cream, and have it all, like, frozen and ready, so that way we can just deliver the meals, and all they have to do is thaw it out and they'll have a meal. And we can't gather, but our mission is that nourishment, you know, to be able to still have tradition in a time like this. You know, we're not gathering, which it's really hard, but at the same time, it's like we still have a way to connect, and we know that not gathering is actually the safest thing and the best thing for all, you know, for our kinship. That's the best thing to do right now, is to stay home. Yeah, but it's definitely been kind of hard, and it's sad because, you know, it's like, oh, we were just picking up and getting into this, like, movement of just really growing, and then it was just like, okay, nope. We're pausing.
Yeah, big pause.
Yeah, big pause. I'm sure that is the same for many, many nonprofits and a lot of businesses in town and whatnot. So I know that we're all kind of going through it together.
Well, thank you so much for going through all of that. It really sounds like you're trying to find some creative ways for the community to stay connected and be nourished, you know, in this new reality. Do you want to add anything else about what y'all are doing right now?
Well, the one thing that we are working on that we can't gather, but this is more so like just really exciting for FCIC in general, is the one thing that we're doing is we're working with the Grand County schools right now, and we're actually getting policy written with the school district for the IEPs that are disciplinary for the Native youth, which unfortunately there's quite a few. We are actually, instead of like suspension happening, the Nourishing Traditions program is actually becoming a part of that IEP. It's a big deal. It's a big deal for us. That's like our biggest thing that we're working on right now. So it's like, even though we can't see it, there's still some really big things happening underneath that will eventually come to, you know, the surface.
That's Kristen Ramirez Marsh, Executive Director of Full Circle Intertribal Center. You can stay up to date with the Moab nonprofit by following them on social media. If you're a business owner in Moab, it's safe to say you've felt the economic fallout from the COVID-19 health crisis. Whether your business is attempting to stay open or just shuttered entirely, there are resources out there. Grand County's Community and Economic Development Director, Zachariah Levine, joins the newscast to review the latest on grants and loans. He breaks down roughly 5 current programs for businesses at the local, state, and federal level. So get your pencils out.
So first off, thank you, Molly, for once again allowing me to come on air with you. My purpose for today's session is really to provide a brief summary of available grants and loans. We are in a bit of a slow period right now in terms of local, state, and federal activity related to the creation of new programs. Over the last 2 to 3 weeks, there has been the creation and emergence and deployment of many new emergency financial relief programs. It has been a whirlwind, to say the least, and we have done our best to provide comprehensive coverage of this very dynamic conversation in our economic development newsletters. But admittedly, it has been somewhat confusing because it has all unfolded so quickly. The agencies responsible for managing and dispersing funds in these programs have been, you know, changing program guidelines after the programs have been announced. Mm-hmm. Everybody has been trying to figure out their exact role. And so what I want to do today is provide a really simple overview of the programs that are available at each level of government. Okay. And so basically, there are 5 or 6 programs that are available for local businesses, small businesses. This includes sole proprietors, 1099 contractors, nonprofits, and other business types. So I'm going to start at the local level and then move my way up to the federal level. I'm quite excited to announce today that we have in place a local grant program. This is the product of being able to reallocate some existing grant funding that was previously awarded for a different use. But with state approval, I have been able to reallocate a portion of that funding to a local grant program. Small businesses can apply for this grant through my office. We now have an application on our department website. We will be noticing businesses about this grant in our economic development newsletter that has also come out today. Grants can be offered up to $1,000. These are for businesses that have been negatively affected by COVID-19. And it's a very simple application. We just need a copy of a business's current business license, a filled out application, a narrative stating that the business has experienced hardship, and we need proof of that hardship. So that would be a bill or a set of bills up to $1,000 or exceeding $1,000. But again, we can only grant up to $1,000. I would just emphasize to the business community that you should apply for what you need. If you don't need $1,000, don't apply for $1,000. We will start the pot with $40,000. It will be dispersed on a first-come, first-served basis. Mm-hmm. And so if all businesses apply for $1,000, that would mean we have grants available for 40 businesses. If some apply for less than $1,000, then we can spread that money across a higher number of businesses.
Wow.
Okay, so that's the Grand County local grant.
And just a quick follow-up, it's a grant, so no loan. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So many of the programs that have come out have been some form of a loan. Mm-hmm. We acknowledge that some businesses may be very wary to take on additional debt financing right now because it is unclear when businesses will be able to start generating revenue again and whether or not their revenue will still be down or increase. And so that has implications on their ability to repay loans. There are some other programs that are forgivable loans or become grants if you use them properly, and we'll talk about those in a second.
Okay, great.
Okay, so the second opportunity at the local and regional level is an emergency loan fund that is administered by our economic development district, our regional economic development district. Many folks may know this as the Southeast Utah Association of Local Governments, or the ALG. San Juan County, Grand County, Emery County, and Carbon County are all part of this regional association of local governments. So all businesses in those four counties have access to this emergency loan fund. This loan fund is also going to be dispersed on a first-come, first-served basis. This is a loan. It's not a grant. Applications are open right now as well. We have a short summary page of all of these grants with links to the various agencies hosting the programs, with an information link and an application link. So again, the ALG Emergency Loan Fund, it's got a loan amount of $5,000 to $10,000. The interest rate is 4%, and the loan term is 3 years, with 3 months of deferred payments following the end of an emergency declaration in our area. And the loan has 9 months of interest-only payments and 2 years of amortized payments. Okay, so once again, the loan doesn't need to begin, or a borrower doesn't need to begin repayment until 90 days after the end of an emergency declaration period in our area.
Okay.
So for businesses to access this emergency loan fund, they need to be able to prove their need for emergency funds. They need to be current on all business taxes. So that would include things like transient room tax, sales tax, payroll tax. And the loan funds in this program may only be used for working capital, marketing, or inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, this loan program is open. It's a revolving loan fund. So as borrowers pay back into this loan fund, it sort of refills the pot so that future businesses can also access this funding. It is part of a larger revolving loan fund that the Association of Local Governments manages that was already in existence. Businesses, new businesses, small businesses that are trying to grow, they can continue to access funds in this ongoing revolving loan fund that's got slightly different terms. It's got a maximum loan amount of $150,000. And so in our summary sheet, we've got information about both. But in the near term, the emergency loan fund is likely going to be what many businesses in the Moab area want to access.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so the emergency loan fund managed by the Association of Local Governments, that is the second option at the local and regional level.
Now, what else you got?
Yeah, so I'll move on to opportunities at the state and federal level. Okay. There is one loan opportunity at the state level. This is the Utah Small Business Bridge Loan. It is being offered by the Governor's Office of Economic Development. It is an $8 million fund with 25% of that money being set aside for rural Utah.
Okay.
The Department of Workforce Services contributed some money to this loan fund, and the rest is being sourced from elsewhere. The first application period for this Utah Bridge Loan has actually closed. It was open from March 31st to April 3rd. The second round of funding, or the second round of applications, will open up April 16th. It's the first round was a four-day application period. I anticipate the second round will also be a four-day application period. The application window closes, and then it's about a week before the Governor's Office of Economic Development's team, you know, reviews and selects applications for funding.
Right.
So, you know, imagine it being about a 9-day to 10-day window between submitting an application and receiving notice and funds.
Okay.
The loan amounts for the Utah Bridge Loan Program are $5,000 to $20,000. This is a loan with 0% interest for 60 months, so 5 years. And the first payment is deferred by 12 months following the end of the declaration period. This is a competitive application. Funds will be dispersed not just on a first-come, first-served basis, but also based on GOED's evaluation criteria. Mm-hmm. Some basic requirements that businesses want to be aware of include the requirement that businesses needed to be established and licensed before the beginning of the year, so before January 1st, 2020. Mm-hmm. And they need to be in good standing with the Utah Division of Corporations and Commercial Code. Okay. GOED will verify that status when you apply. Applicants need to have employees on their payroll for whom they have had payroll taxes withheld. So in other words, W-2 employees. So this would not include 1099 contractors only. You need to have W-2 employees.
Okay.
Applicants must provide 6 months of pro forma of estimated lost revenue or other documented loss evidence. So the goal for GOED here is to support businesses that have experienced severe economic impact due to COVID-19. They want to select businesses that can demonstrate a multiplier impact on other industries. Mm-hmm. So these are businesses that fit into a larger chain of economic activity or financial transactions, not just, you know, one end point of sale.
Okay.
Businesses that play a key role within a strategic state supply chain. So again, you know, demonstrating this multiplier impact and fitting into larger economies of scale.
Okay.
So once again, applying is not a guarantee of funding. GOED will select businesses based on these criteria.
Okay.
There are several, you know, requirements that you need to submit with your application. Rather than going through those, I will just direct small businesses interested in this loan program to the summary sheet and the resources on our department webpage. Okay, so that's the one state program that's currently available.
Okay.
The last two programs I want to talk about are federal grant and loan programs. These came out of the Family First Coronavirus Response Act as well as the CARES Act. Okay, so the first program I want to talk about is the Paycheck Protection Program. This is an application that is open now. Businesses can apply through approved lenders. So these are commercial banks and credit unions. They do not apply directly through the SBA. The PPP, as it's referred to, is designed to help small businesses keep their workforce employed.
Okay.
The new program will be available retroactively from February 15th, 2020. So employers can rehire employees that they recently laid off, and it will be active through June 30th, 2020.
Okay.
Once again, you apply through federally approved lending institutions. So in Moab, that would include Zions Bank, Mountain America, Eastern Utah Community Credit Union, Desert Rivers Community Credit Union, Wells Fargo, and others that are approved lending institutions. In terms of eligibility, this program is open to all small businesses. It includes nonprofit organizations, veterans organizations, tribal concerns, sole proprietors, self-employed individuals, mm-hmm. and independent contractors, all with fewer than 500 employees. Or no greater than the number of employees set by the SBA based on a particular business's industry sector.
Okay.
So this is kind of a catch-all to keep people out of the unemployment insurance system. It's okay. Frankly what it's for.
Okay.
The maximum loan amount is $10 million. And here are the loan terms. If an applicant uses the funds they receive through the PPP program or the PPP loan within the first 8 weeks following the date of the loan origination, then that amount of money is forgiven. Okay. So that's why this is kind of a loan slash grant. Okay. So because of the high demand for this program, we anticipate and the agencies anticipate that not more than 25% of the amount forgiven can be for non-payroll expenses. Okay, so this money can be used for mortgage payments, insurance, rent, utilities, but we anticipate that no more than 25% of the funds you receive can go towards those activities. The rest should go towards payroll.
Okay.
Whatever you don't spend that is forgiven in that 8-week period is rolled over into a loan. Okay, so that becomes a loan with an interest rate of 1% and a maturity of 2 years. The first payment is deferred for 6 months. This program doesn't require any collateral or any personal guarantees, and there are no borrower or lender fees payable to the SBA. So the money distributed through this program is intended to be dispersed very quickly once your application is accepted by your lending institution.
Okay,
so once again, money that you spend on eligible expenses in the first 8 weeks following the loan origination, that money is forgiven.
Okay, got it.
On our website, we do have links to frequently asked questions as well as lists of all of the authorized lending institutions, both banks and credit unions.
And will you remind us the website again?
Yeah, so you can go to grandcountyutah.net and then go to the Community and Economic Development page.
Okay, thank you for running through all of this. Is there more?
I have one more program.
Wow, okay,
yeah.
Good.
Okay, so the last federal program is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. Businesses may hear this referred to as the EIDL. Or even the EIDL. Applications for this program are open now. There's no deadline to apply. The EIDL program is intended to provide small businesses with working capital loans of up to $2 million. For this program, businesses apply directly through the SBA. So they will apply on the SBA website. We have a direct link to their new streamlined application process. In this application, you may also select a checkbox in the application. This is on the third step of the application that you want to be considered for an EIDL loan advance. Okay, so this loan advance could be up to $10,000 and it would not be repaid. Okay, so this also becomes a grant if you do receive the loan advance. You may receive the loan advance even if you don't qualify for the full loan package. So this is a worthy application to submit and a program to go after. There is a new application for this program that came out after March 31st. So if businesses applied before then, this was one of the first programs to come out. This was part of the second stimulus package. So if you applied before March 31st, I would encourage you to fill out one of the new applications to ensure that you get access to the loan advance. This program is open to small businesses, that means less than 500 full-time equivalent employees. And the loan term is 3.75% for small businesses and 2.75% for nonprofits. It's got a maturity date of up to 30 years, so you can set the time that you want to repay this loan over. Once again, there's no immediate deadline to apply. There's no fee to apply. And we've got a whole series of frequently asked questions and top line information sheets for businesses. Okay, so those are the five or six grant and loan programs that I wanted to cover at the local, state, and federal level. Real quickly, that includes a local grant up to $1,000. That includes an emergency loan fund at the local and regional level. Those are loans in the amount of $5,000 to $10,000. There is the Utah Bridge Loan. That's the state level program offered by GOED. Mm-hmm. Loan amounts vary between $5,000 and $20,000. The two federal programs that I discussed were the Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, or the EIDL.
Okay. Thank you for going through all of that, because I think I'm hearing in the community that, you know, people know that they're there's stuff out there. They just don't, the summary is really helpful to have it all in one place. And is your office able to field questions from the business community or even employees and kind of direct people to resources?
Absolutely. So we have a rapid response business consultation team that includes representatives from my office, our Small Business Development Center, the Travel Council, the Chamber of Commerce, and several experienced business people from the community. We are fielding questions via email and phone already, and we will also be reaching out to as many businesses as possible directly via phone and email starting this week. The state of Utah has also established what they're calling a rapid response team as well. And so there is a portal at coronavirus.utah.gov/business. And the portal on there provides an opportunity for businesses to submit one-off questions to a team of folks at the state level. So there is assistance for businesses at the local level and at the state level.
Got it. Is there any other, you know, issue that you want to address or that's on the mind of your team at the task force right now?
Sure. I will say, first off, that the summary that I just provided of the loan and grant programs does not include some of the other financial relief included in the second and third stimulus packages. So we have provided information elsewhere on the emergency paid sick leave program, the Emergency Family and Medical Leave Act, the payroll tax credit that businesses have access to for retaining employees. So the goal here was really just to showcase the grants and loans, but there are other aspects to the second and third federal stimulus packages. There's another program through the Federal Emergency Management Administration, FEMA, that incentivizes businesses to pivot production of emergency medical and disaster products. Again, we have covered these other programs elsewhere. My goal is to strictly cover the loan and grant programs because that's what we really felt like businesses needed clarity about.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said in the beginning of our conversation, we are highly attuned to the need to help businesses get through this emergency period. So that would include, you know, the next several weeks to several months. We don't know exactly when we will be able to reopen and rebuild our local tourism economy. That depends a lot on the travel and shelter in place restrictions in the surrounding region and throughout the country. It depends a lot on the availability of testing, of contact tracing, of effective treatment programs, a vaccine. We just need a lot more information before we can set a timeline or phase in process for our local economy. Okay, so we know that there's a need to get through this undetermined amount of time,
mm-hmm.
but we also understand that restoring our economy and reimagining our economy is also a longer-term process that involves, you know, a whole host of activities, but the name of the game there is economic diversification. We need to find businesses, support businesses, elevate businesses that have current value propositions, but also longer term value propositions, some that are more insulated from global economic disruptions and that will enable our economy to be more resilient in the face of global economic disruptions. So we are working on both of these timescales right now, but I will say that the vast majority of our efforts are really focused on this near term support.
That's Zachariah Levine, Grand County's Community and Economic Development Director. If you travel to grandcountyutah.net, you can find his department's page. There you can subscribe to receive COVID-19 newsletters full of business resources and updates. Find links in the show notes of today's news on our website or podcast. And that's the news for Tuesday, April 7th.
Get your community-powered journalism Monday through Friday at noon, 7, and anytime online at kzmu.org.